Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening, everyone. This is Wednesday, the 5th of March, and Brian and Ileana, we just got more snow. Actually, it's just a dusting. Nothing to get excited over, I guess. Tonight, after Bits and Bobs, I'll be joined by my partner in Progress Toward Democracy, Brian Stetton. We're going to find out a little bit more about Brian, because when you're doing interview shows with people, you don't always talk a lot about yourself. So we're going to do that. And then, in the second hour, the third half hour, Sarit Jason joins us. And we'll be talking about the latest in Palestine. And because it's still the name, Israel also. So our flash updates tonight are a reminder that Saturday, the 8th of March, is International Women's Day. And Women's Day, I should say. And there will be a lot of activities around the world. So just duck, go it, or, you know, check it out however you do. Lots of things going on. I just saw in the news that Facebook is in talks to buy a drone manufacturing company so that they'll be able to take the internet to places it's never been in the world. So we'll see how that works. And then also, happy birthday to Masao Okawa in Japan, who just celebrated her 116th birthday. So it gives hope to all of us. I think that's wonderful. I saw a picture of her. She's in a nursing home, and she was eating something. She didn't look, you know, like you might think somebody who's 116 would look. As far as they know, she is the oldest person in the world. But, you know, there's a lot of people under the line. So, you know. Anyway, tonight we're going to continue a bit about the simplifying, decluttering, cleaning up, getting rid of toxins, all of this. And I was just thinking, you know, we're getting rid of things, material things in our life we don't need. And we're also trying to clear out different mindsets and inside, more of a spiritual level maybe. So tonight, broken pieces, this goes to both. I'll start out with the material things, because for some reason, recently, I've had a run of breaking dishes. And I'm one of those people that really doesn't like to eat off of plastic. I never have. And I say, if it can't be broken, I don't want to use it. And not having, and I didn't have to worry about that either. So anyway, I've broken several things lately, and some of them were things I really liked. But like brother said, you know, well, you had it as long as you had it, and that was it. And so some of the things, you know, I had pitched, others I kept in a couple different places, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, they can't be repaired. So I am giving myself a certain amount of time, actually plenty of time, but I've got all together now. And by the end of the gardening season, if I haven't used them on flower pots, if I've not made stepping stones out of them, you know, mosaic-wise and all that, then they're in the trash. But there's a definite date. So, you know, we're not saying just throw things out without thinking and then go back and say, oh, I wish. So just give yourself some deadlines. It's easy, and that's what I'm doing. There's also a couple pieces of different terracotta pots I've had for, you know, broken pieces for quite a while. I kept saying, okay, they're going in my next pots when I repot something, or, you know, plant flowers for the summer. So that's going to be it. But I have a deadline for it, and it's not tomorrow because, you know, there again, it's unrealistic. But I just thought I'd share that because I think that it's good when we can bat some ideas back and forth. And I have a few pieces of broken jewelry, and there again, I guess that jewelry, I'm a little bit more sentimental about it. Don't want to get rid of it. So I'm very good with my hands, and I don't like the word crafty so much, but I can do a lot. But I've never really learned. I'm not a jewelry maker, and it's not a hobby either. So if I do anything with these, it's going to have to be something simple, but I'm going to, because otherwise they're going out. It's just not, I don't want little things around to catch my attention when I need to have a clear mind. And I think that that holds for a lot of us. The clear mind is important. So that's just a couple of the real things I'm working on. I've also been doing the 21 things a day since we talked last week. And it's fun because, you know, some of them go straight to the garbage because there's just no redeeming qualities. But a lot of them are going to the place where I live, where I donate things to. And then I found a few more things that will go to friends. So it's just fun. It's clearing up and clearing out. And I've been trying to do that with spiritual also, because anybody who follows politics and sees what's going on in the world with an open mind can't help but get angry and upset. And so, which I don't mind being angry or upset. I don't want to be that way all the time. But once in a while, like that old nasty word hate sort of crosses through me, and it's like, God, I hate these people. And I have to remind myself, I don't hate the people, and I truly don't. I hate what they're doing, but I just need to get some of these words out and stop using them improperly. It's okay to hate an action, and but for me, I really don't have the energy to spend on hating a person or a group of people. So I think being clear is part of simplifying and focusing on the real feelings that we all have instead of just generalizing or saying something that's so easy to come out of our mouths, phrases and things that we hear so much that we use them and we don't think at all about what we're really saying. So for me, that's something else I really want to work on. Also, the broken pieces has to do with maybe our hearts, actually, because I don't know anyone who is an adult who hasn't had something happen to their heart relationship-wise, like a taken away. And so I think that that's one thing that we can mend. And in fact, you know, a lot of things, once they're actually glued back together or stick together or something, they're stronger. And I think that that's something that we can concentrate on, because there again, if you emphasize crack in the heart or the broken piece, whatever's chipped off or just chipped away a bit, if you put all your energy into that, it sure isn't going to mend. And, you know, if you're having bad feelings about it, it's not hurting the person that you think hurt you. It's hurting you. I mean, they've gone on, they're living their life. And whether this is a relationship, a friendship, even something with a family member, it still holds. We need to take whatever steps are necessary to mend these pieces. And that doesn't mean that you will be best friends again, that you will get back into a love relationship, but it means that you're going to mend yourself and let it go. because you have better things to do in this world. You came here with a mission, and it's good to be able to tackle that mission without dragging baggage. That baggage is really hard to pull along with you on your way to the mission, like traveling light and simply seems to make a lot of sense. So there's many ways, and I would urge you to please write me. You just put bits and bobs, anything you want in the subject line to ericafio@yahoo.com and give me some of your ideas on how you are simplifying, cleaning up what you're doing this spring. Because now, today, Lent starts for people who observe the 40 days. We know yesterday was Fat Tuesday. And yes, I had pancakes traditionally. You know, that's the thing, pancakes or donuts. So anyway, I don't celebrate Lent, but I think that anytime a lot of people are raising a certain kind of energy, there's nothing wrong with jumping in there and adding your energy to it. So that's why last week we started talking about getting rid of things. Not a sacrifice. We're just going to clear things out. It's springtime, almost. And so it's going to be a spring cleaning. So I was curious as to what people were there again giving up for Lent. And when I was growing up, it seemed like chocolate was the big thing. And other people would give up all kinds of candy. And, you know, I look back, the things that people were giving up were things that weren't good for them anyway. So even though they didn't think that at the time, but it's funny because now, you know, a lot more people are health conscious. And so we would say, well, they were doing something great for themselves. And that's how I feel with the things that I don't eat, because first and foremost, I don't eat because of the animals and the planet, but also I am much healthier than when I did. So I think that there's an innate sense in our lives, if we listen to it, don't let ourselves be influenced by ads, commercials, neighbors, your friends, you know, because in the end, you're responsible for yourself and for your own body and what you do to it. So I think that also has to do with, you know, giving up, passing by, whatever, as we go on to simplify. Because I will never say, become a minimalist and only own 100 things in your life. And, you know, like the spoon, what's it called? Spork, you know, just the utensil, the spoon and a fork, and a bowl to eat out of, and maybe a pan to cook out of. And, you know, we're not going to go that far. But get rid of that stuff that is not bringing value to your life. If it doesn't make you smile, if there's nothing you can really do with it, it's really time to toss it. So that is my bit of a rant for the bits and bobs for tonight. And now we're going to go on to my Monday night partner, my comrade. Hello, Brian.
Oh, hi, comrade. Red salute.
Red salute. Isn't that funny? I mean, I was thinking about that today. When we started doing our show, we were lefties, but we have surpassed ourselves
as time goes on.
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, again, if you talk to the average person on the street, you can't say the C word, communism. You can't say the socialism word, communism. But they're both equated with terrorism in this place. So, You have to be careful. It's especially if you want to make sure people have an open mind. I caught the last few bits about what you were saying. It sounded like you were talking, or it sort of made me think of a film, a documentary called Forks Over Knives, which was, I think, criticizing, I guess, the eating of meats and so forth.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
You recommend it?
I do recommend it.
I caught part of it. I need to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was a recommendation from Gloria, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the lady, for our listeners, we're talking about a friend of ours, Gloria, who is also a vegan as I am, and Brian is heading.
Flexitarian, I guess.
What do you call it? Well, flexitarian? Okay.
Yeah, that means I eat what's put in front of me.
See that?
Overall, I try to be pretty careful depending on the budget. When the budget's not there, I
eat
not
meat.
As careful.
I just thought something about somebody was saying that the meat they sell at Aldi, like ground beef and things, is horse meat. And, you know, I mean, to me, it doesn't matter because...
No, it doesn't. They're both sentient beings that we've killed.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I fully understand.
Right.
And so, get it. Yeah,
it's amazing how people will get all up in arms. Oh, my God, they're slaying the horses for food. It's like, well, you just did in a million cows for food, so... Yeah, it's very strange. But I wanted
I mean, that was amazing, though. And by the way, it's related to, well, a lot of the animal rights issues actually are closely related to capitalism. You know, definitely. I mean, for example, the factory farms and how they're making them worse. I mean, from what I gather, they're planning to have multi-story factory farms. So you have cows stuck in little... Yeah.
Yeah,
it sounds nightmarish, but I gather because we're going to be exporting beef to places like China, too.
Right.
So
we're going to be ruining their health, too. So, hey, you know, years ago when McDonald's went to Russia, I thought, well, okay, that's one way to take them down, you know, feed them that shit. And so now we're going to do it to the Chinese. Sure.
There is a growing, you only have two countries where there's really a growing middle class because they're so big. Middle class over the last few years has pummeled practically everybody else globally, not just in America. But it's a theme Wall Street's pushing. It's called the Americanization of the globe. And definitely they want those Chinese to become American consumers so they can make a lot of bucks off them.
Right.
So they're going to Americanize China.
It works fine because you give them the food, well, you sell them the food that makes them sick, and then you can sell them medicine that keeps them alive. Before we leave that topic, did you know, Idaho, part of my heart is there and will always be. I love Idaho and Wyoming. But Idaho just passed a law, one of those that, you know, so we'd be terrorists again if we were to go into a... one of those horrible, and believe me, I've seen them. I've seen them from the outside. I haven't been to
slaughterhouse. If you take a pictures inside a slaughterhouse as an activist, or you go into a factory farm and take pictures or something like that, you're labeled a terrorist. And they're really going after one group, and that's the ALF, the American. The Animal Liberation Force, I believe, is what the ALF stands for, which is a strong activist group. And they have been guilty of property damage. You know, they have never hurt anybody. They never done anything to hurt anybody, but they've done property damage, which should not be a jailable offense, actually, considering. But anyway, you sue the person or something. You know, I mean, you don't. But
these factory farms, they don't want people to realize, because people have their heads up their butt to the extent that it's just like, well, they're humanely killed. It's like there is nothing humane about it. And what they don't you know, they don't want the regular person in the street to know that because it might make them think.
No, there's nothing remotely terrorist about any of that. That's terrible.
Yeah, the terrorism is what is put on the poor animals. But
exactly.
I want to ask you just a little bit about, you know, because on Progress Toward Democracy, which is on Monday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, on Radio Akasha, I want to get all this in. We have interviews. You have found some great people to interview. And so sometimes, you know, your own views, I mean, we can sort of tell, but not maybe all the way. And I just wondered how you became interested in politics in the first place. Was this from your family, or was it something in school? What happened?
No, that was over the last decade. That was fairly recent. I was disengaged politically before that, and would vote based on office mates' thought when I was working full time in the financial sector. That's how I voted.
I
was so out of touch.
Answer.
You know, CNBC wasn't on in the background all the time. The finance channel that used to stand for Consumer News Broadcast, obviously, then they merged it with another financial network, and it became the powerhouse for people that like to day trade. Fox News tried to compete with their own Fox Business Network, which is still on, and apparently is a complete failure. Amazing. I mean, they've been able to build up a brand name, or they're able to build up everything else, but that they failed in. But CNBC is extremely conservative, extremely for the right. And so you have that in the background all the time. You buy into this notion of fiscal conservatism, but it's crap. You know, but if you didn't know any better, you know, you have economists go off and talk about trickle-down economics, for example, like Lawrence Kudlow or something. They have doctorate degrees. You would think they're authority figures, and they're pushing the myth. And everybody knows it at this point. Matter of fact, economics as a whole should be at this point considered very debunkable. It's a model that you have to impose on society, let's say, and the more the model diverges from what we call reality, the more coercion you have to put on those people in society to get that model to work. And the model's failing, and so to get the model to work, they're going to have to put more coercion on us, and I think we feel that now already.
Well, so there you were, working away with this in the background.
Yes, I diverged, didn't I?
Okay. No. So what happened? What made you, you know, do the face slap and say, "Oh my God," or was it just a very gradual?
It was kind of gradual. It was kind of gradual, and I had friends that were Democrats, and I got enamored with. Actually, I was very enamored with the concept of the possibility of the first Black American, African American president at the time. So, I mean, my views were fairly straightforward, but you know, I always had a mistrustful view of people in politics and business, but at the same time wasn't able to finish my doctorate in physics, so working in the business sector. And I had a very narrow view. I guess I became more awakened as I saw what we were expecting to be a fairly liberal president behave like a moderate Republican, and it just didn't seem to make any sense. It just was, why is the system working this way? You know, because frankly, there were a number of liberals that felt that Obama was the next Franklin D. Roosevelt, which is laughable. By the way, this whole the debate they had between Republicans and Democrats a few weeks ago about Obama is using so much executive power that he's a dictator. And it turns out, you know, the president who probably used executive orders the least the past decade's Obama. So, I mean, hardly. He hasn't. But the person that issued out the most executive orders in the history of this country, Franklin D. Roosevelt. An astonishing number of executive orders. Apparently that's what it took to put the elites under control. So, frankly, we should be angry that we got somebody that was, frankly, insanely weak. I think as I delved into trying to understand why the system is the way it is, I got into the works of Noam Chomsky, Michael Parente. I mean, I was becoming more far-left liberal than learning more about the nature of the system itself. After all, the economics did seem to be literally deteriorating around me. I mean, I was, at that time, selling email marketing, and I had a six-figure year. I went from that to, like, zip. Sales just fell off the map because businesses lost all their budgets to advertise. And even though you need to always advertise to keep customers coming in the door, the advertising budget when things get soft is the first thing to go, which actually is a mistake, but that's what they do. It's the first thing to go is the advertising budget.
Yeah,
you know, and there went work. But it's sort of, I mean, it's just amazing. Seamlessly moved into Marx. But, you know, it's just, I think it's not so much a matter of when you awaken or how, just that you do. I think what helped me was my background in physics. And because you tend to like to look at things on when you see a problem, you sort of want to understand on a more global, big picture level when you're studying physics. You know, so I may not know, say, all the details about how a television works in terms of, say, how the circuits are arranged on the board and so forth, but have enough of a general understanding, you know, based on just basic electromagnetic theory knowledge and so forth, that I can think of it in layman terms and have a good understanding of how a TV set works.
Okay.
You know, it's a difference between understanding how it works versus repairing it. Huge. All right,
yeah,
that requires. So, you know, and the same thing goes with how an engine works and how, I mean, so physics gives you this global overall how things work in terms of, you know, it's a, by the way, it's a great website, How Things Work. I strongly recommend it. I used to love it, and it still exists. Frankly, because that site started off as like a physics chemistry site, and it just grew beyond that. And now they'll have things like how, you know, certain aspect of politics works or something. I mean, it's essentially become like a Wikipedia. They just don't look at their How Communism Works thing. It was written by a right winger, and that essay is such crap. I don't know. Just, I mean, it defines communism as they define it as basically Stalinism. And, no, that's the definition. No, it's
not. Okay, so how things work, you can't trust it.
So I mean, when you start looking at, well, I feel pretty comfortable with understanding how society works and the system works. And it's not really all that mysterious, and I think anyone can pretty much feel comfortable along that way. Otherwise, you start, you know, falling into bizarre theories that have no reflection on reality. But, you know, it's a systems problem, which basically the form of capitalism we have, and the form of capitalism any would have, it's essentially anti-democratic. And you would have accumulation of capital, meaning more money in the hands of a smaller segment of the population. That's, you know, and that money translates into political power. And so we see the system fails effectively because of that. You know, they throw in corporate lobbying and campaign contributions, a revolving door, even endorsements are financially based, really. I mean, the whole thing, you know. So the system is geared toward pretty much working toward the 1% of the population, and it's stuck that way until we make fundamental changes in our economic system and probably restructure the politics as a whole, too.
Oh,
the only
totally.
Problem I have with my, you know, my far left. What's that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this system needs to come down. It needs to, well, I mean, we don't need more Band-Aids. But I was going to ask you, do you remember the first person that you talked to face, like after your views had started to change? And do you remember the conversation or the person
the very
or anything?
First, the first guest that we ever had?
No. You yourself, when you started getting more involved in politics before we started the show.
Oh, yeah. I think how far into – was I, like, already about as radicalized as pretty radicalized when I started the show? No, I think actually as –
No.
I think we both were... I think we've both been moving consistently to the left.
Yeah.
Actually, even you have – and you still have a couple. But you had very conservative views on a number of issues. For example, unions. I remember early on we were kind of debating that. For example, the Republican argument that social programs are a poverty trap, you know, food stamps and so forth. And, you know, you kind of sided to a point with the conservative.
Well, I think I've seen, but
I want
a guaranteed income for everybody.
Everybody's seen. No, I'm for guaranteed income too. But I mean, everybody's seen some abuse, you know. But I mean, the abuse is 1%. I mean, you have several millions of people, so 1% of several millions people still
it's
fairly sizable number.
1%.
So that means there's a chance that you'll run into somebody, abusing, say, food stamps in the supermarket right in front of you, and you may catch that and but that doesn't represent statistically the majority.
Exactly.
It just isn't.
Well, and the union thing, I know I was very skeptical on that because I thought that there had been a time, but I really didn't understand because I'd had relatives who had businesses and then some who worked in and out of unions, and there was a lot of confusion in mind about unions. There is no confusion now. I mean, we only have 7% of the population in unions. We really need to get on it.
Some type of structure has to come back, obviously. I think the problem with the unions themselves is you had lots of corruption in the unions, too, because, again, it's about money.
Sure.
You know, the president of the SEIU gets paid several times more than any of the workers, and they're not very democratic. The union boss is making the decisions. It's not, the decisions aren't democratically made. So, I mean, that really hurts the unions, and that's why some people even like calling them bourgeois unions. At the same time, they're better than nothing. You know, I mean, they do collective bargaining.
They're very hard. It's very hard to organize. A friend in Minnesota, Alan Mackey, he comes on Stewart's show frequently, and I'm going to have him on Friday night, I think. Working with the Native people to try to unionize the casinos. Oh, my God. I mean, that is, quite a good job. Of course, there's no support for it.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Support in the casino. I mean, the casinos are owned, we know, by just a few people, and they're not Native. They're not American. They don't really care because there are jobs on the red unless you know. And so they seem to think they just have unlimited labor.
Well, you're still breaking up quite a bit.
Oh. I wonder what's happening. Well, I don't hear you breaking up, so you keep talking.
Okay. No, I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying that it's very, very hard.
Do we have a situation where they need unions? Is that basically what you're getting at? The casinos should be unionized? The workers, that is?
Right. But, you know, it's just a case of it's almost like a work kind of thing.
You think it's a bad idea for the casino workers? I mean, some of the casino workers aren't very well paid at all. I mean, it depends on the casino.
Well, no, they're not.
And what kind of job.
Minimum or less, and...
Yeah.
They're evidently you can smoke, I guess, in the casinos there.
Right.
And so he's talked about the health risk to them. And,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I hate the fact that restaurants and bars and all have come up with this no smoking thing. And I don't smoke. But I know, me personally, if I go into a bar and there's
right.
no fog in the air, I don't think I'm getting the ambiance that I remember.
Well, that's a strange reason to want to see smoking in a bar. But, I mean, there are bars that have... Yeah, it depends on the bar. But, I mean, from what I've seen, the majority of drinking establishments that are purest drinking establishments seem to allow smoking, from what I've seen in Florida. And those that are restaurants, no smoking. So it's
I've
seen that.
The bars, you're not supposed to smoke them, and but so people will go outside and smoke.
Yeah.
Some bars let you smoke, but you're expected to throw some money in the kitty. So when they get fined, there's money to cover it. You know, I mean, every place is different. But no, so there's a smoke. There's the health hazard, and there's a lot of things that the unions can work on if you get a union going.
Yeah. Well, the most of the population in this country that smokes are the poor. You know,
yeah,
that's where the addiction's the biggest.
Isn't that horrible? Because you know they've upped the prices so much. Because I have friends who smoke, and I know how the prices have gone up. And, my God, so then you have poor people who are addicted, and then there's no money left for food.
It's crazy. I saw a spurt of shops that would where you can buy cigarettes that are rolled and cut on the process at significant discounts to what's in the market. But I think Florida then passed some law to make it illegal. So I've seen those shops fold up. But, I mean, I guess they try to find ways around it, too, to get cheaper cigarettes. You know. But what I've also seen is that they don't have that kind of tax structure on cigars. So you have cigarette-like cigars that are like a fifth the cost of a similar pack of cigarettes would have because of all the taxes on the cigarettes. But I do think it was a smart thing, taxing the sins.
Brian, you were talking about the do your own. I went to the clock.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're breaking up so badly from my perspective.
Oh, I wish somebody in chat would let me know if they can hear me or not.
I hear you fine. It's just that occasionally it gets choppy, and so I lose every other part of a word.
You
don't. Crystal clear. It's when you're talking in a steady sentence. I mean, go ahead. I mean, let's try.
Oh, okay.
Pick it up. I hope I didn't throw off your line of thought there.
Okay. Well, my friend George in chat says that he can hear fine. So, okay, great. Thanks, George.
Okay. Strange.
Okay.
Blog Talk gets weird. And I think it's picking at the stuff on the left because too little of it is left-wing on Blog Talk Radio.
Right. So it's easy to target us, is that what you're saying? But what you're saying is true. I went with her to one of those shops, and they gave her this thing of tobacco from Kentucky. I mean, and you say what kind you want, something similar, whatever. And she's American Spirit, so it was something similar. And then you go to this machine and you dump it in, and you they start making cigarettes. It was very interesting. But it closed, like you said. When we were there, there was a thing which I did get when I got home. I got online and sent something to somebody because even then they knew that they were probably going to be closed, and they were. So any time that you come around something, I think you should just grow your own tobacco if you want. I mean, it'll be a lot safer for you. It won't have
I gather tobacco is very hard to grow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
the exact opposite of pot. Pot is apparently, you know, I don't speak from experience. I've never done it. But from what I gather, it's very easy to grow. And there's plenty of magazines about the subject. And so there's whole magazines about the subject. It's amazing. You have this whole industry for a drug that's still illegal in most states. But it's interesting how the population is shifting on that. And so my question is, okay, we legalize pot, which is fantastic, but what is the prison industrial complex going to do next to keep those cells full? They're not going to want to lose that. That's their customer base. You know, and interestingly enough, Noam Chomsky pointed out that one conservative writer on the subject effectively felt that cigarettes could be criminalized.
Brian, since you don't smoke, but I have a friend who...
I smoke cigarettes. I got to quit.
Janet,
you're breaking up. I'm so sorry.
What are the cigarette things that, I mean, they're involved, but it gives them something to do with their hands. And I don't know what they call that. They both use those. And some places they're trying to make that illegal. Or they're trying to make them charge a lot. They're taxing them.
Yeah. Well, using progressive tax to get rid of something that's frankly killing millions of people isn't a terrible thing. I mean, the statistics for the amount of people that die annually on cigarette-related causes are astoundingly high.
Brian, it has tobacco. What Gwen and Janet are using, it's one of those products. But I don't really know how it works. I've never seen somebody.
You mean that what they put in there to make the cigarette addictive? There's a lot of additives for that.
But what I'm talking about isn't. This is what people quit smoking. They go to this thing. There is no tobacco. There's nothing in it that's going to harm you. But they're trying to tax it more.
The vapor cigarettes that are being sold?
Maybe that's what it is. Because the tobacco companies are against that, and they're trying to make the Costco or whatever, and then I heard that they were trying to buy up those companies because it's a threat to them.
Although, I mean, honest with you, I don't think the tobacco companies care about the American market anymore. They know they lost here. They had a major war to keep it. I mean, you had scientists come out initially saying smoking's bad for you. Boy, they just threw money into marketing firms that came out with all this stuff denying the science. Very much like what's going on with the climate change debate now. And so you had this denial bullshit propaganda coming from the tobacco companies. That war went on for a year. But science won.
Madison Avenue.
Science won. Yeah, so we know it's... We've seen the usage in this country decline considerably. You know, I mean, New York City, you can't smoke or something. I mean, so basically it's declined quite a bit. And I think they're simply focusing on third world nations. You know, again, you know, the Americanization of the globe, well, not as many Americans smoke, but perhaps there's all those Chinese. You know, I mean, look at Indonesia.
Remember that picture of that little kid that went around Facebook, I don't know, maybe a year or whatever, that little fat boy
that was smoking cigarettes, and he was like only a few years old, or if that, maybe less. Yeah, that was in Indonesia. That footage came from Indonesia. Indonesia is everybody smoking. everybody smoking. It's people riding on a bike are smoking. I mean, it's insane over there. But I mean, the tobacco industry has done a really good thing. I mean, they don't have a country that requires putting on the label that it can potentially harm you. So, you know, and I think it's probably a more corrupt government there, so it's probably easy to keep that out of high school textbooks and you name it. So,
a more corrupt government. That's just interesting on its own.
They're all corrupt for the same reason.
I know. And we know that capitalism is like at the core of so many of the ills in the world. But I wanted to ask you, what's really tugging at you nowadays? Or what countries are you still involved in? I mean, at one time it was Pakistan and Haiti, I know.
Yeah, I think we both have a mutual Facebook friend in Ukraine, so it's interesting talking to him, Dmitry. I think you had him on as a guest on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dmitry. And so we should be talking to him. You probably should get him on as a guest again right now because it's an interesting time. So, I mean, he was the one that first clued me in that, hey, a lot of these protesters are neo-Nazis. And he started giving me more information. And so he basically woke me up on that note before I started seeing it in other left-wing literature. So that was kind of, you know, it's good to have a person over there that, you know, you can trust anyway to give good information.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have Facebook friends in Pakistan, but sometimes they're on another planet. You know, the one of who is a nice guy, but used to called in our show a few times. Red something, code name Red code, code name.
Yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice guy, but
he's very nice.
You know, I mean, he actually, when you get to know him, he doesn't realize it, but he's equivalent of a radical, fanatic right wing libertarian. Yeah,
I was going to say he's a Tea Partier in Pakistan or something.
Basically, he's a Tea Partier in Pakistan. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But I mean, the thing is, there's a bit of overlap. I mean, what's interesting is that if you put, you know, a lefty in a room with a conservative in America, they're at each other's throats. But take that right winger American Tea Partier type. If you put him in the same room as a right winger in Pakistan, because of differences in religion and stuff, they would be at each other's throats. But the left winger that's more tolerant and so forth and wants to see a connection, he gets along with the right winger from Pakistan or elsewhere. So, for example, on the issue regarding Israel and its treatment of the Palestinians. You know, that's something that enrages even the most radical right-wingers and people on the left there universally. I mean, they all see it as horrible. And so, I mean, that's one issue that we connect with. And also, of course, anti-imperialism. The problem is, being libertarian, they don't see the reasons why. I mean, they don't see the class struggle. They just don't see the class struggle. So when you're far to the right, you don't see the class struggle. You tend to look at everything as sort of unitized nations, and they're the problem. You know, you nationalize everything.
Yes.
And
yes.
So, you know, America is evil for the sake of being evil. And, you know, but they don't think about why is the government bad. You know, and perhaps the elites in his country happily, you know, take payouts from the elites in our country, you know, and what the elites are doing to their country, they're pretty much doing to us, too. I mean, they're third worldizing the entire globe, and that's happening here, too. You know, as we see labor rights fall apart and our basic freedoms removed and so forth. So, yeah.
Well, that's it. The we have so much in common, though, and that's what the internet has done for us. So I'm so grateful
definitely.
We can talk with these people everywhere. and find out.
I mean,
the
only problem is, I mean, some of them get too anti-Semitic. The right-wingers, not the left-wingers there, but the right-wingers there, certainly they get very anti-Semitic and just think in terms of the evil Zionists. You know, and once again, they don't look at the bigger picture in terms of the capitalism, that you have, you know, a lot of wealthy elites in Israel that want to keep the situation that way. You know,
oh, sure.
You know, I mean, if a single-state solution occurred there, then you'd have Arab people that would have the right to vote and can influence things, and, you know, God forbid that. So that's you know, it'll threaten their position.
Well, and Israel is having, I mean, Sari talks about this like every week. I mean, Israel itself is having a lot of problems. A lot of people are on the streets. A lot of people are getting through garbage. It's not that Israel is, you know, perfect either.
What do you mean?
I mean that there's a lot going on there. That there's a lot of people who are rebelling, not just the people, the Israelis who are pro-Palestinians, but the ones who are just against their government.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. There's been a lot of, yes, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. Yeah.
So it's very
agree.
Interesting to see what's happening there.
Oh, yeah. It's hardly talked about in our press, but it's mentioned in Haaretz or a publication like that, perhaps, which is that's a pretty left-wing publication, by the way, Haaretz, which and has both contributions from people in Israel and people in the Palestinian. It's a really good, it's very good journalism. I strongly recommend Haaretz.
Because she's, you know, she's from Israel. I mean, she's right. In this country. But she, of course, speaks Hebrew. And so she gets on different groups and, you know, tries to preach to them. And also, though, she sees these great videos and things on YouTube. And she'll send them to me. Of course, I don't speak Hebrew.
Definitely.
But she doesn't even have to, like, try to translate because it's so obvious, you know, a lot of them, like, what's going on. And it's very interesting. It's a lot of things that people here don't know about, and the
it's rarely ever talked about.
Well, the Zio Christians, whoever they are here, they don't have a clue because you know they listen to mainstream media and they're preachers, and so that's not what they're telling them. So it keeps things interesting, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Okay, we'll say that climate change is really number one. If we don't have something done about that, I mean, nothing else is really going to matter. But aside that, when you come back from climate change, what is the pressing thing in your view?
Climate change is the. But before I on the last note regarding that, AIPAC, which is. The most powerful Israeli, basically PAC, Political
entity.
Action Committee, to raise capital and influence our politics, has been losing power. They used to be able to brag that they could pretty much guarantee a majority of the votes whenever they wanted in the Senate, and they haven't been getting their way. Of late, they've been failing on things. I mean, if you go back to when Chuck Hagel was nominated to be Secretary of Defense, AIPAC was really dead set against it, and they failed. And since from then on, they've been having a run of bad luck. Most noticeable is AIPAC has been pushing like mad for us to go into war with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They can't seem to make any headway. I view that as a positive sign. I mean, AIPAC just had its meeting, and so I mean,
okay,
you know, it's.
I just have to be, you know, the bitch and say, well, of course, because they're having greater problems in their own country. They don't have enough money to pay off the people that they used to.
Yeah.
So that's what I say, but
that could be related to that. Yeah, could be.
So, you know, because we know that AIPAC has paid off. Only heaven knows how many people. So, you know.
I mean, I heard that somebody did a study of AIPAC in terms of looking at the donors and trying to find any tax information they could and so forth. And there's tens of thousands of people that will write a $100 check or something, drop it in the mail. But apparently the bulk of the money comes from two people. So it's only a couple rich, you know, Israeli fanatics that are actually the main sources of money for the thing. So it's, again, it tells you something about the concentration of capital. Again,
yes.
It gets in the hands of too few, and wow, APAC, that had a major influence on our foreign policy for years. So why should a couple people have that kind of impact on what society
does? Yeah, is that George guy one of them?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Was that George guy one of them?
George?
Yeah, I can't think. One of the two that finances them.
They didn't know the identity. They just saw those two people.
Okay.
So officially there isn't. So I mean, it'd be speculate. It would be crazy. Who were you thinking though? Because
I don't know.
Curious.
George something. I don't know.
Are you talking about Soros?
Was that him?
George Soros.
Maybe.
If possible, anything's possible. I have no idea. I sort of doubt it, actually. I mean, the Republicans are more tied to AIPAC than the Democrats are, even more so.
Yeah.
And you call the Republicans, just like you have a sort of a critique of elites from the left, the Koch brothers and so forth, the right-wingers have been criticizing certain liberal elites, and George Soros is attacked as the evil man, demon, puppet master, so he's considered more liberal. I somehow doubt it, actually, he would give money to AIPAC. He has given money to more progressive causes. That's why the Tide Foundation is condemned as something, as a group that's focused on destroying America, according to Glenn Beck. And Tide Foundation basically just cuts checks to activists, campaigns, and so forth. Actually, they've done some good work.
Okay, well, yeah.
Adbusters, which is responsible for Occupy Wall Street, only got like a couple, like $10,000, hardly any money, a couple of years ago. But that led some people to speculate, George Soros is responsible for Occupy, which, of course, is a joke. I mean, it's...
Right.
Like Soros' Tide Foundation knew that 10 grand would somehow magically turn into, it's just a string of coincidences there along the way. History sometimes like it, it's like a tree branch. It just goes off in different directions.
Well, that does happen. Everything, like I say, well, I really don't believe in coincidences, but sometimes it just happens. You're talking about the tree branch, that's like the rabbit hole. You get there and then it goes off in all kinds of places.
But I mean, the tree is still growing. It's still going forward as history does, but it goes all over the map, and sometimes it sort of spirals, and you go through a little bit of what you went before sometimes and so forth.
Well, some branches start to
weigh
down. They grow down a bit. I mean, just depending on the wind and everything. So, if you want to use that for analogy.
Mark's basically... Go ahead, I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
Well, our time's almost up, so I wanted to ask you, because you've gotten involved in the last few years, like you said, so if somebody wants to actually start getting involved in politics or for a cause that is resonating with them, what kind of advice would you give them?
I would recommend seeking out some group that's doing hardcore activism on that cause. There's plenty out there if you Google it. Activist group, what your cause is, you'll find something. I would recommend if your main concern is, say, TPP, Move On, for example. I like to recommend stuff more radical. There isn't really any great nationwide socialist radical left. Perhaps the IWW, but that's scattered, really. I mean, it's a... A lot of that you have to learn on your own. But in the meantime, I don't believe, as some on the far left do, in liberal bashing. It's sort of needless to sit back and argue whether we should have a state or not when we currently already do have a state. We have to deal with the reality we have in front of us. And revolution's not going to occur unless it gets to the point where it's impossible for reforms to be made. And currently, reforms are achievable. But ultimately, to save society, we do need to make major changes. Convert the current existing corporations into worker-owned cooperatives, for example. That will require some changes in how we define private property. That requires a revolution.
starting to you know, the left is so scattered and fragmented. We've talked about this with Gloria, too, on Progress Toward Democracy, that, you know, we really need to find those core things and bond together over the big issues and then, you know, get that taken care of, and then we can work on the others. But, Ryan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
it's been a
lot of fun. Reiterate that Brian is on Progress Toward Democracy on Monday nights at 10 o'clock Eastern on Radio Akasha, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah.
See you Monday.
Okay.
Yep, good night.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good night. Brian Stetton, and now we're going to Sarit Jacobson. Hi, Sarit.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, I am good. So much has been happening in Israel and Palestine, mostly with the Israelis doing the deeds. So this past week or the past couple of days, what are some of the news items that have really hit you? Either a news item or something that you've talked with people online about or on the phone, on Skype?
Yes. The Palestinian football players have been attacked. This is not the first time that are under attack.
Was this the first time, though? This was the time, I mean, I had never heard about what they did this time. That was horrible. I couldn't believe that people are that filled with hatred. Do you want to talk about what they did to the...
Trying to hurt the moral and the hope of the Palestinian people, because football to them is... It's a beautiful thing for people that don't have a country, you know, to have something like that.
Yes.
It's a little hope for them. So there's two guys. They injured, I guess, the best players in the team. They shot them, and then dogs attacked them, too.
Right. They shot their feet so that they can never play soccer again. And
never.
And the dogs attacked them. Yeah. So,
totally
very demoralizing. I mean, my God,
the joy and it's their national soccer team, and now their best players will never be able to play again. Yeah,
right. Yeah, that was just so despicable. Yeah, I was crying because I couldn't. It seems like such a. I mean, I.
9 and 17 years old.
You are. I mean, we run out of words because despicable, you know, only goes so far. But, I mean, the things that they think of to do, and, I mean, that was just totally.
They're not seen as human.
No, exactly. I mean, that's what just, it's the same thing as, except maybe worse in ways, and you know, when they come in and just raid your house in the middle of the night kind of thing, because it keeps people just in fear, totally in fear all the time. And then this, it's more
when
than
this happened. Yes.
Hmm? Well,
it happened
really
in a checkpoint.
Ah, okay.
10 bullets were put in Jawar's feet.
10?
Adam took one in each foot.
Can you imagine?
And then the dogs on top of it. And I remember when I was in IDF for 3 months, there was next to my base a place where they kept the dogs, and they were mean dogs. They would growl at me through the fence.
Because animal abuse, because that's the only way you can get dogs like that. I mean, they've done stuff to them.
Oh, I didn't know that. Terrible. I know IDF has a whole base full of dogs, even from the 90s.
Wow.
And, you know, back then, before we had internet and camera phones, I remember living in Israel, and no one was allowed to film or take pictures in the territories, what they call the territories. They never let press in. Some Israeli press got in, and it looks just like what is happening now has been always happening. They were always chasing children who throw stones and doing arrests and arresting children who don't throw stones just to give everyone a good scare.
Well, they just did another arrest in school. They went in the school.
In the school and threw tear gas in the school.
Yes.
Yes, it's the International Solidarity Movement's talking about it. They arrested a 17-year-old in a school, Al-Sawiya School, 5th of March, 2014, from the International Solidarity Movement. Four youth detained at the checkpoint, too. They're crazy. And if you see how the Israelis are talking amongst themselves on their news or their groups, the right-wingers there, they are insane.
Yeah, they're fascists. They're like the Tea Party here kind of thing.
I
was talking about them earlier. Yeah, it's just that whole one way, like you said. I mean, everybody else is subhuman to them.
And that is who AIPAC is supporting in Israel, and AIPAC is funding right-wing terrorists to run Israel who don't listen to the international court, who don't listen to the Israeli high court.
No, here's something people don't understand, that even the high court in Israel says something that these people don't follow.
Right.
People here don't understand that. And that's what I was trying to explain to Brian, that people here also don't understand how Israel is really, besides the Israelis that are pro-Palestinians, there's a lot of people there who are just totally against the government, and they're upset because the economy's tanked, and, you know, they're digging in the garbage for food, and all that stuff that you don't hear in this country.
And not only Palestinian children are being taken in the middle of the night, Israeli children are also being taken into homes. I know of a case of an Israeli girl who was, they decided her mother is unfit to raise her. I'm not sure why. Mother seems perfectly fit to the social workers and the lawyers who decided to take her case. And her daughter was raped in that home, and they kept her with the boys who raped her. They never separated them after the case, never sent the girl home.
They never separated them?
Never. I never even told the mother. The girl told the mother.
See, I'm very much, I know people who have been in foster care when they were kids, and they have horrible stories, absolutely horrible. So,
there too?
I think that, I mean, that's here in the United States. There's not enough, or they aren't trained enough, whatever, the social workers, for the amount of, for their caseloads. And so it's not that they want the children to be abused, but they just don't have, they either don't know or they don't have the time to really check families out. So there's been a couple times when I thought about turning some people in, or not turning them in, but I was going to call like City Hall and ask if anybody there knew of a church that could come up with some shoes for some kids that I was aware of down the block in the winter who were, they ran outside in, well, it was really cold weather, and they had no shoes on. And but then it dawned on me, if you call like any kind of law enforcement officer and tell them that, it's their duty, even though I wasn't trying to get them in trouble, but it's their duty to turn them, to call social services. And I was afraid the kids would be taken away from their family. And the next time I saw them, they did have shoes. But it was, I wasn't going to be responsible for them taking them from their family, because their parents did not abuse them as such. You know what I'm saying? They were just really poor. But I would not want anybody to get tangled up in the system here. And it sounds like the Israeli system is just about as bad.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So I don't want any, that I can't. Now, they've been picking on Christians too, as I understand it.
They've been what?
Picking on the Christians.
Yes.
there are some Christians there, and evidently they don't have it all rosy.
The Palestinian Christians also live under siege and behind walls, just like the Muslim Christians. I heard
right.
they might be getting a little more rights, but they still suffer. For example, if they live in the territories, to the settlers, there's no difference. And the settlers throw rocks at them to the point where they need Israeli activists to walk their children to school.
Right. That's well. And then when I was reading about the these children that had just been arrested in school, they said
yes.
that the teachers, like they don't have enough teachers sometimes to walk the kids as far as, you know, they don't have. And just like our friend who was beat up, well, a lot, but who walks the kids to school, Guy
Brutavia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, and he gets beat up for it, but he is, I mean, to be fair, once in a while, in some of the areas there, the Israeli soldiers will walk the kids through the settlers' squatters area, so they can't. But the soldiers sometimes are doing other things. They don't get there in time. And then that's like when Guy would come
soldiers
along and
are
take
racist.
Kids. You know, yeah. So those squatters
often.
Are horrible. You know, you were talking about the dogs, Sarit, that the IDF keeps. And I understand that the squatters, also known as settlers, that they keep very vicious dogs, too.
Oh, yeah, and guns. They're all armed.
Yeah, and they have the guns.
Armed.
They have the dogs.
And there's many testimonies of soldiers that of a crazy settler running with a knife trying to chase people, and the soldier cannot arrest the settlers trying to protect Palestinians. I mean, it's a well-known, even Israeli comedians make, my favorite Israeli comedian made fun. He says, oh, my son calls me from the settlements, and he says he's busy all day protecting the Palestinians from the settlers. But that's if you're very lucky and have a very kind soldier.
Right. Right. If
very
you have one who didn't succumb to the brainwashing, okay, because there's so much brainwashing. As with any military, because that's the
yeah.
only way you get people to go out and kill their brothers. And we are all brothers and sisters. We all share the same.
Oh, yeah, especially the children of Abraham. It's disgraceful.
Well, that's the whole thing, that the religionists who come from the big three, they share, at least in their minds, the Abrahamic tie, and then they fight with each other. Isn't that bizarre? I mean, those of us who aren't involved in those are much better at getting along, it seems.
So great for the bankers and the military industrial complex.
Money. Well, that has way back when Eisenhower warned against it, he knew what he was talking about. But
he was, oh yeah, he was so correct.
Yeah.
Right now, there's so much profit in war over there that I don't believe that. As long as we have capitalism, I believe it's going to continue.
Exactly. Me too. I mean, that's my thing. As long as we have capitalism, we're going to have this because. Yeah, a few people are making tons of money, and then more people are making enough money to want the wars to continue, and then there's the rest of us who, you know, just are you know, we're just beyond words because we don't believe that anybody needs to be out there shooting somebody, killing people, so that some company can go in a country and, in many cases, I'm not talking about necessarily there, but, you know, steal the natural resources, which is the case there because Israel wants that natural gas and stuff that's off Gaza. That's one of the things.
Oh, yeah.
It still comes back to natural resources. I mean, any way you look at it. And that's horrible. There was something else, though, that I saw, and I don't understand. I thought maybe, I don't know, you might, evidently, the United States is denying some of the senior Israeli officials to get entrance visas into this country. And this was in the Israeli newspaper. I don't know how you say it. Maariv? M-A-A-R-I-V?
Oh, Maariv.
Maariv, yeah. That's what they said. That some people, it was funny, including the Mossad officers and Shabak, have been denied visas. And it actually said that in the past 12 months, now I'm reading some of this out of the paper, the hundreds of cases of employees from these agencies have been denied entrance into the U.S. And it's like, wow,
that is amazing.
That's amazing. It's, well, gee, I don't understand what brought this on. I think that it's wonderful.
I think Netanyahu was way too cocky.
Well, maybe, but I mean, it's, and that's something that you probably won't necessarily, I don't know, I didn't look it up in mainstream media for this country, so I don't know if, but I would think it's probably not been reported too much, because if it was, then those Zio Christians would be just peeing their pants. They'd be jumping all over the place. So,
but they're ranting about it on Fox News. I'll go check later. Fox News is like a lesson in anger management.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cancel all those lies. You know, they just lie. It's such a crime to lie to the people like that and keep them totally misinformed.
Well, that's what they do. I mean, we know that. What is it? I think the don't they say that the mass media, the mainstream media in the United States, whether it's radio, TV, the newspapers, whatever, and we're talking about the bigger markets, are all owned by like maybe six or less corporations. So, you know, it's the only way you're going to get any kind of truth is from alternative media like us, and maybe in some small town there might be some small station that, you know, isn't owned and controlled by, but they're probably not going to have a very strong signal, so they won't reach a lot of people. It's very hard, and it still bothers me a lot that I can't turn on a radio, and of course I don't have the TVs anymore, and get like true news. When I say it, friends, I try
I
to
agree
get,
with you.
You know,
it's
I
very
can
frustrating.
Sometimes I can listen or watch their TV in the middle of the night, like Press TV or Russia Today or something. But it's always like in the middle of the night, and a lot of people don't have that choice. I mean, they just have like whatever local cable or something like that. And so they're not going to even get a chance to see real news.
It's a great way to destroy democracy, just keep the people totally misinformed.
Sure. And not just misinformed, but informed the way you want. You can. Yeah. It's not, we're just going to tell lies, but we're going to tell the lies that are advantageous to us. So they do it so well, though, Sarit.
Oh, yeah, I have a neighbor who is a 90-year-old lady from Germany.
Wow.
So we talk about the media here, and even she compares it to the media in Germany way back then.
Way back. Wow. Yeah, because, well, if she's 90, yeah, I mean, she lived through it. She knows.
She does. Lovely lady. Yeah.
Wow. Does
alarming
ever,
when German people tell you the media, Fox News, is just like Nazi propaganda channel.
Well, what does she say about the rest of, like, the way the government is? Does she see the the similarities with, like, fascist Germany?
Totally. She says she doesn't believe anything the leaders say.
God. That, you know, that's so sad. I mean, she made it through over there then in her home country, and then she comes to a country that's supposed to be, you know, so wonderful, the world leader and wonderful things, yada, yada, yada. And now she's starting to see the whole thing again.
Yeah.
That's just sad. But we need to have more people like her, then they need to speak out.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, okay, people, you're supposed to learn something from history. You're not supposed to repeat it.
There's a lot of talk in my neighborhood. She's talking to all the neighbors, and they're talking to their friends. And I had another neighbor told me that one of the things his dad passed away, and before he passed away said, there will be a revolution in your lifetime, son.
Yeah.
All in my neighborhood, you know, just people talking.
No, that's excellent. I think I like your neighborhood a lot.
It's just normal neighborhood.
Yeah, but people
kinda
are
normal.
Talking. Yeah, well, you know, and you never know who. I talk to people in shops sometimes. I mean, if there's anything, you know, somebody says or something that I can start using as a base to start talking about the different situations, the political stuff, I do. And, you know, I mean, I do it thinking, well, we'll see. And several times, I mean, people are right with me. And if they hadn't thought about it before, then they'll start thinking. And they say, well, yeah, I guess so. Or that, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I mean, it's like people are more open.
Yes, the political dialogue is slowly changing. It's probably, I think revolution is a thing that never ends. It's so ongoing, but
well,
definitely
it
a big struggle.
I mean, we don't want it to end. I mean, because we want things to evolve. And, yeah, I firmly believe there will be a revolution. I just pray for as small amount of blood as possible to be shed. But I smile when I think of after the revolution. You know what I'm saying? Like it's the change. So your neighbor's father said that he would see it in his lifetime. Okay.
Yeah, that's what he said on his deathbed.
Wow.
I had a friend who passed away, and he also said that before he passed away, that there will be a big protest about people before prophets. There really was.
Yeah. So, can you imagine? Yes, people before prophets. Can you? And when people, you know, when people aren't just numbers anymore?
Especially people in Gaza and West Bank. No one knows what's going on there, and they're really suffering.
Right, because it's not, and it's not that it's not out there, because, I mean, it's there, but if you're in America and you're watching mainstream media, it's not there for you.
If you're in America watching mainstream media, please add friends from Gaza on Facebook and talk to them. You can use Skype or phone. You'll be amazed what you'll hear.
Well, if you're watching mainstream media, you're going to think Israel's in the right because, oh, those mean people in Gaza, they sent some rocket into Israel. Yeah, you know, some little homemade thing that fizzled out in an area where nobody was hurt. They don't tell you about all the people in Gaza that are being drug out of bed in the middle of the night. At the edges, I shouldn't say, because that's mostly the West Bank. But Gaza is just terrorized all the time with
totally
the drones. And the firing, the fishermen are fired on, the farmers are fired on. They don't tell you any of that.
Every night they fall asleep to the sound of drones. My friend says that sometimes he'll hear a bomb go off in his sleep and he won't even get out of bed anymore. He's so used to it.
Yeah, everybody there's got post-traumatic stress disorder. It's just, that's it. And they have programs and things for the kids, some of the areas there, because, you know, we see on we see videos of some of the men and women that are working with the kids and trying to lessen the trauma. But, and I would assume they have some kind of programs for adults, but not much. So people have are doing whatever they themselves have figured out to do to survive.
An Israeli journalist went to Gaza for a few years and did an experiment of living there and said she enjoyed it very much.
Because she enjoyed the people.
Exactly. She said the people actually are nicer there.
Well,
and she's a feminist woman. I know her from the feminist group.
Okay, so that was really different for her, yeah.
I shared it. It was in Hebrew, so I shared it in the Israeli groups. Yeah, she lived there for many years. She writes for her arts.
Mm. But many times when you find that the most generous and most compassionate people are the ones who are oppressed and who have basically nothing. I mean, you know, going to share, you know, they've got barely enough for themselves to eat, but they're going to share it with somebody else.
That is my experience from traveling there.
Right. So, I mean, you know firsthand. So the people...
Yes, never treated me as an enemy when I was a teenager and went to when I went to Gaza or to the West Bank as a teenager, they never treated me as an enemy, and I spoke Hebrew.
Right.
That's amazing. You know, people told me not to go, that I'll get killed, but I went anyway.
Yeah. But you see that. I mean, you get that from, like, the people that, you know, you Skype with or write message with and all, that there is so much compassion. They don't have that bitterness. I mean, once in a while, of course, but most of them, they really don't. They just want their country.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that. They want to be able to feed the kids, send them to school without worrying about them.
And they're so far from that now. They can hardly feed their kids. One of the problems in military occupation is the poverty. They cannot make it to work if they have to stand 5 hours in a checkpoint and be abused and beaten.
Each
and
way.
5 hours in a checkpoint just in the morning. They have to line up at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
They
never get to see their wives. Every chance Israel gets, they try to make them to work for Israel, and they threaten them.
I have a friend in Gaza who's been talking lately about, he said that for several days they didn't have food, because, you know, we know that Egypt has totally, I mean, you know, tail between his legs, whatever, because they've come down hard on the time, so not much at all is coming through. And my friend said, he had a few days with no food. And, you know, this is just ridiculous. But
it is.
Absolutely. But we're going to have to close. Sarit, thank you so much. And you'll be back next week. And unfortunately, we can pretty much guarantee that there will be some new horrors to talk about. And maybe some good things. So let's remember, if you're sending energy or praying, whatever you do for the Palestinians.
Yes, we need peace.
We have a lot of Israelis who are pro-Palestine, and they're really in a lot of danger as far as physical, work, family, everything. So remember them and send them some good thoughts too, please.
Oh, yes, they're getting death threats.
Yeah. So we want them to be safe too. So thank you, and have a great rest of the week. And we'll see you next Wednesday.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.